The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and today I'm joined by just Nathan Gladwell. Gray Oldenburg is out with a personal matter, so he'll be back hopefully next week. All right, so let's jump into AAA. First story we have today is former Georgia star defensive tackle Jalen Carter has been charged with reckless driving and racing in connection with a crash that killed a teammate and a recruiting staff member. After turning himself in and posting his bond, Carter turned to the NFL Combine to finish interviews with teams. What are your thoughts on the situation, Nathan?
Yeah, it's one of those situations where it's a bunch of stupid college kids doing stupid stuff, and I mean, this is an awful result. It's a tragedy, and obviously Jalen Carter shares a lot of responsibility for what happened. As far as like his future in the NFL goes, I'm sure the teams who have already been questioning his character issues are going to question it even more, and this will really tank his draft.
Yeah, honestly, it's a disgusting situation. He definitely knew better. There were reports coming out that he was warned multiple times before this incident to stop speeding by the police in Georgia, and he continued to do it, obviously. It's just a sad situation, like you said, Nathan, with the loss of two people's lives. Keep him in my prayers. But there was also some documents and recordings from 911 calls. They were reviewed, and it looked like Carter fled the scene before emergency personnel and police arrived. I think that's a terrible look for him. Definitely should have stayed behind, made sure, checked on the people in the accident, and stayed for the police. Definitely not a good look for him. And Todd McShay earlier this season, said Jalen Carter had some character issues and the reason he didn't have him high in his draft. And he was really crucified for it by Jalen Carter's teammates, coaches, and people around the country. Was he wrong now? I mean, especially with the situation. I definitely wouldn't touch Jalen Carter right now if I was looking at a prospect in this draft. He definitely needs to work on himself, and hopefully he can get better.
Yeah, you talk about someone who, you know, is looked to be a first-round pick, and now you have many questions. Could this dude fall to the second round? I don't know where teams really stand on him just because of his character issues. Obviously, he's a great football player, but outside of that, can he stay on the team? Can he keep out of trouble when, you know, it is time for him to be in the NFL?
Yeah, we've seen in the past with guys like Laramie Tunsil and Lael Collins who had some stuff before the draft. I think Lael Collins fell on draft, and then Laramie Tunsil fell pretty far in the draft. So it'll be interesting to see where Carter falls after all this. All right, the second story we have today is the Memphis Grizzlies announced that point guard Ja Morant has been suspended at least two games after displaying what appeared to be a gun while at a nightclub on an Instagram Live video. This came in the wake of the Washington Post publishing a story about three separate incidents involving Morant. One where he emerged from his house with a gun in his waistband and his hand on the weapon after a fight between the boy and Morant during a pickup basketball game in Morant's backyard. Another where he was accused of threatening a security guard at a Memphis mall after trying to get into the mall to confront a Finish Line employee who had a dispute with his mother earlier. The report alleges that Morant told the security guard, "Let me find out what time he get off." And then lastly, most recently, someone riding in Morant's car was alleged to be pointing a laser at members of the Indiana Pacers traveling party near the team's bus. There was a Pacers security guard that said that that's 100% a gun. No charges were filed against Morant in any of these instances. And Taylor Jenkins, the head coach of the Grizzlies, announced last night that there is no timeable return for Morant. What are your thoughts on Ja Morant and how he's conducted himself with these incidents?
You know, you're an NBA player. You're making millions of dollars a year to go and play basketball, a sport you love, a sport you, you know, grew up playing. He didn't grow up in the hood. He grew up in, you know, a good family. His dad took care of him. And really now he just wants to run with this crowd where he wants the street credit. It's awful because he's basically just throwing his career away to have a certain reputation. And, you know, instead of setting an example for, you know, kids that look up to him, he just signed a signature shoe deal. I mean, these are kids who look up to you that are wearing your shoe, and this is the type of example you're setting for them. It's very, very disgusting. And on top of that, going around threatening people, with a gun, a 17-year-old, he's still a minor. It is really baffling to me why John Morant is making these decisions to put himself in trouble when he clearly doesn't need to be anywhere close to it.
Yeah, like you said, Nathan. I mean, he's supposed to be a role model and hero for these kids, especially in the Memphis area. He's the face of that franchise, and it's just inexcusable what he's been doing. There are easily avoidable incidents, and he puts himself in these situations that he could just easily just not be in. He had to have seen what the Washington Post posted earlier. I think it was the same day when he went to the nightclub and started waving around that gun. It just shows how ignorant he was at that point. It's just pure stupidity. And I think Shannon Sharpe said it best on Undisputed. He said, "I wish Ja would realize he's not a thug. You're putting yourself in a position you didn't have to, even need to be in. You want people in the NBA to think you hood, to think you gangster. Nobody looks at you, Ja, and think, man, that's a thug. What are you going to do is put yourself and your family in harm's way when you don't have to? And for what? Street cred?" I just think Ja, he needs to take time away from basketball and just, like Jalen Carter, figure out himself and improve what he's doing.
A lot of character issues.
Lots. All right, Nathan, I apologize in advance. The third story we have today is New Orleans Saints have signed former Las Vegas Raiders quarterback Derek Carr to a deal that could potentially be worth up to $150 million over 4 years and includes $100 million in guarantees. Do you like this signing by the Saints?
I'm just gonna put the simple answer. This is awful. This is the exact opposite of what the Saints need to do. With the amount of cap space they had, they keep restructuring deals here and moving this money back. And you go and sign a fleeting star quarterback in Derek Carr to $150 million deal over 4 years. Likelihood they're gonna end up restructuring his deal, moving money back, and at some point they're gonna have to pay all this money. And it's gonna be an awful, awful time when they have to. But to go and pick up someone like Derek Carr, he has not been the best over the past few years. He obviously the Raiders didn't want to use him anymore for a reason. And you go and give him all this money, and I really doubt what Derek Carr will be able to do on this team, not only because of his ability, but because of what is surrounding him in the offensive line, who have started to have issues since teams have traded for other offensive linemen in the past from the Saints. But can the defense even, hold opponents to a limited number of points to where Derek Carr can actually score or, set up something for the Saints? It just, you talk about the number of quarterbacks on the team. You have Jameis Winston, Taysom Hill, Andy Dalton. And it's a failed project. The Saints need to start a rebuild. And this just takes a toll on my life, having to go through this experience of watching this team sign mediocre quarterbacks.
I mean, I think it's great in the sense that he's now the best quarterback in the NFC South, who has Desmond Ridder on the Falcons, Kyle Trask on the Buccaneers, and an unknown in Carolina. I think the only quarterback on the roster right now is Matt Corral. So, I mean, it's great in the sense that he's the best quarterback there, but it's crazy if the Saints think Derek Carr will win him a playoff game, much less a Super Bowl. The roster is in shambles. They haven't been good in years since Drew Brees left. I think, like you said, Nathan, the best case for them was going to be to rebuild, tear it all down, and draft a quarterback like a Hendon Hooker, or even if Anthony Richardson were to fall somehow, even though after his great combine, something like that, or trade up for somebody like Bryce Young or CJ Stroud. But this move just seems like they wanted a bridge quarterback, a quick fix. And I don't think it's going to work out. This was just a terrible move by them. And like you also said, Nathan, having all this money on their books, trying to push it back and push it back, they eventually have to pay it. And I don't know how they're going to handle it.
Not well is the answer.
And I mean, if Derek Carr doesn't work out, they still have Taysom Hill under contract, who's a great quarterback.
He's a great whatever tool he is, because he doesn't play a single position. He just goes around and switches positions every single play. So I don't know anymore. The Saints are awful.
All right, Nathan, let's move into college basketball. What do you got for us for the past
Yeah, let's
week?
go ahead and start with the Iron Bowl of basketball round two. Auburn goes on the road to play Alabama. Obviously, this game had a lot of meaning. It meant that Alabama secured the regular season title. Auburn came out fighting. I will tell you that they took a early lead. Alabama struggled shooting the ball in the first half, struggled to play defense. Auburn did everything right in this game, really, shooting wise. They shot 60% from three. I don't think I've seen this from that Auburn team all season. The defense and paint was incredible. Jani Broom was all over the place. He had a lot of blocks. They really took Brandon Miller out of the game the first half. And then, you know, it's like a tale of two halves because Auburn then decides to go and blow a 17-point lead in the second half. Alabama fights their way all the way back, and this game goes into overtime. Obviously, you don't want to go into overtime in a way arena, in a way setting, especially in a game of this magnitude. And Alabama ends up taking the win 90-85 in overtime, securing the regular season title. To start, I think that Alabama has gotten really cold shooting wise at the worst possible time. You will see this when we, you know, talk about the A&M game coming up. But for them to have adversity and be able to fight back in this game, the one person who really put them back in this game being Javon Quinterly, who's playing some of the best basketball I've seen him play all year round. He's able to get into the lanes, get these easy layups, and, you know, it started to pile up and pile up. And sooner or later, Alabama was back in this game, and, you know, he was really the spark. But, you know, as this Auburn team, I feel like they played well enough to win this game. They just have trouble finishing. I've said this all year. They can't finish basketball games. Wendell Green was taken out of this game. He was 2-for-10. But besides that, everyone else played well. KD Johnson was incredible, and somehow they lost. Alex, what did you see from this Auburn team?
Yeah, I thought the game was over with 11 minutes left at Alabama down 17 points. They couldn't get anything going at the offensive end. But like you mentioned, Javon Quinterly came off the bench, gave him a spark, and brought him back into this game, and they eventually won it. And in the second half, Mark Sears came out firing on all cylinders, making the three-pointers, giving us a quick run there. And then Noah Klein was also aggressive as well. Needed to see that with Brandon Miller struggling, shooting 3-for-12 from the field, having 6 turnovers in this game. It was good to see those guys get back in a groove, especially with the way they've been struggling these past few weeks. I definitely thought Bama was going to lose when Mark Sears decided to pull up for a 3 in transition with time winding down and gave Auburn a chance to come back and maybe even win the game. But like you said, Nathan, Auburn just can't close out these games. And they, I don't know if they don't realize this or not, but you have to play the last 10 minutes of a basketball game. I'm not sure what they're doing. But Bruce Pearl, after the game, was really frustrated with officiating, throwing his headset after a post-game interview. He might be the only coach in the NCAA that can yell at a ref for an entire game and not get a technical foul. There are definitely questionable calls both ways, but when you have a 17-point lead and you blow it, you can't really blame the officials at that point. Auburn, like you said, Nathan, haven't played well enough to win this game, but they just couldn't close it out.
Yeah, and I'll speak on, you know, the rest for this game because they were awful for both sides. You really go and look back at, I think, really the main play being when, you know, the bench is cleared or the Alabama bench cleared on that technical foul when Wendell Green kind of instigated this whole situation and KD Johnson and Javon Quinterly after Jani Broom picked up his 5th foul. I don't really agree with Broom picking up his 5th foul. I don't think that warranted a 5th foul when him and Javon Quinterly both fell out of bounds. I felt like that was incidental contact. I felt like, you know, it's one of those plays where you just should have been moving on. I don't think that was a good foul call. But other than that, Alabama had 2 players ejected in this game in Brylon Griffin and Charles Bediaco, 2 key players where you don't have bench production from Brylon Griffin, who was huge against Auburn a few weeks ago with his shooting and defense. And then you lose a 7-footer in Charles Bediaco, who's been playing some of the best basketball I've seen him play since he came to the league. So there were, you know, key pieces missing, and yet you want to complain about Jani Broom being out and you had the lead. Bruce Pearl is really just a joke at this point. If you can't finish a game when you're up 17, you don't need to be complaining about the officiating. And it's not like there's this huge free throw disparity either, because Auburn still got 24 free throws. The only difference is they missed them.
I can't agree anymore.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to Alabama versus Texas A&M. This game really wanted to make me claw my eyes out, thinking that Alabama shot a solid 19% from behind the arc. In the first half, Alabama could not hit the broadside of the barn. Shooting was, you know, awful. I don't think there's any other word I could use to describe how Alabama shot the ball. No one can make anything. Brandon Miller was 7 of 23. It's incredible how poorly this Alabama team has shot in the past few weeks. You know, I don't know what to attribute to that, because, you know, if you like 2 months ago, they were shooting lights out. It felt like they were winning every game by 40 points. And now here we are with, you know, going on the road at Texas A&M in a game that ultimately it doesn't really, really matter. It didn't have any big implications, but it's still, you know, the final regular season game. You want to come out and win it. But Texas A&M came out, they were ready to play. They filled the stands, they filled their whole arena, and, you know, they had their goals set, and they came out and they met those goals. I will say this, Alabama started to make a run in the second half. They were getting back into it, and it felt like every single time Alabama would commit a foul and Texas A&M would get to the free throw line, that momentum went away. And I think the ultimate thing was Brandon Miller fouling out. I forget how much time was left, but that's probably one of the biggest events that happened in this game. Brandon Miller was, you know, really, you know, had the momentum in this game. He was bringing Alabama back, and he commits a foul on a transition, and he was just out. So you look for other guys to step up in this game. And I will say this, Alabama had a chance. Mark Sears secured a rebound with less than a minute left, and Alabama could have went down and tied the game, but he commits a stupid turnover. Turnovers were huge in this game. Alabama had 18 of them. So on top of not being able to shoot, you turn the ball over. You put Texas A&M at the free throw line. So there's not really a good excuse for Alabama in this game. Texas A&M was just the better team, really. They were able to get to their spots and get to the line and make their shots, and they didn't look back.
Yeah, I mean, the differential in the free throws is something to look at if you're an Alabama fan, shooting 11 compared to Texas A&M's 28. You can't blame really officials in this game when you go out and shoot 33% from the field and 19% from three. I mean, you can't expect to win a game shooting like that, especially in a hostile environment at Texas A&M. This game should have been a lot farther apart than what it was. Obviously, it wasn't, with Alabama cutting it close towards the end. But Mark Sears looked terrible, like you said, Nathan. Outside of the second half of the Auburn game, he hasn't looked like the guy we saw earlier this season, who was just dominating the competition. And Alabama's really struggling at the wrong time. They really needed this double bye in the SEC tournament to get regroup and get back on track. You kind of mentioned this a little bit, Nathan, but who was going to step up to help Brandon Miller and Javon Quinterly in these crunch time moments? No, Clowney's kind of limited in what he can do, creating his own shot. Jaden Bradley really struggles to shoot three. And then you have Nemari Burnett and Rylan Griffin, who are in slumps themselves, like Mark Sears.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the number one person you would turn to should be Mark Sears, but he hasn't been able to really do anything these past few weeks. I mean, he was really, you know, scoring the ball efficiently earlier on this year, and he's just turned into a completely different player. So, you know, spark-wise, I think it would have to be between him or Jaden Bradley. But Jaden Bradley struggles with outside shooting. So it's going to be interesting to see who steps up outside of Javon Quinterly and Brandon Miller. All right, let's go ahead and move on. I know we already talked about Auburn's game against Alabama, but Auburn did pick up a win versus number 12 Tennessee at home this Saturday, winning 79-70. This was, you know, a must-win game for Auburn with their tournament hopes kind of on the line. You have number 12 Tennessee coming to town, big implications for Auburn, and they really showed up and controlled most of this game. Tennessee, you know, didn't shoot, you know, poorly. They were 47% from behind the arc. They were able to, you know, get to their spots, do what Tennessee normally does, and try to get it to the rim. And, you know, Auburn for the most part, played solid defense. Jani Broom continues to be Auburn's rock in the paint. He's able to block shots. Everything you expect him to do, he is doing. Wendell Green had a much better game this Saturday, shooting 8 of 14 with 24 points. I mean, you really rely on Wendell Green to be the spark for this Auburn team. He is the true tale of how Auburn's going to do in a game. If he shoots efficiently, if he puts up a lot of points, they're probably going to win. And if he doesn't, then they're probably going to lose. It's exactly what Gray has been saying this whole season. And, you know, this game can't make this any more true. Auburn, you know, they really finished the game finally. I don't think, you know, I don't know if they had it in them before, but they sure as hell proved it here. I don't have any other things to say about this Auburn team other than you just got to finish games, and you know I'm proud they finally finished one.
Yeah, I think we should throw in a pizza party for them the way they finally finished a game. They definitely secured their spot in the NCAA tournament with the win against Tennessee. But for the last few minutes, it looked like Auburn might blow the lead. Tennessee made a quick run there, but then Bruce Pearl put in Zeb Jasper to come in and guard Santiago Vescovi, and it changed the game altogether. Absolutely shut him down, Zeb Jasper did. Tennessee struggled to create offense without Vescovi there, and Sakai Ziegler missing the game with a torn ACL. Tennessee ended up missing their last seven shots and did not score a field goal in the last 13 of the game. So you look at a guy like Zeb Jasper coming in and absolutely shutting down the best player. That's what he's supposed to be doing. He has struggled at times to do that this year against guys like Eric Stevenson at West Virginia. And then I forget the other guy. But it just looked like Zeb Jasper finally figured himself out and came up clutch for Auburn there. Wendell Green and Alan Flanagan hit two back-to-back three-point plays and ones that kind of separated themselves from Tennessee at that point. But you look at this Tennessee team who lost to Kai Ziegler for the rest of the season. They struggled without him. They had no offense outside of Santiago Vescovi, and I don't see this team being a threat in the postseason.
Yeah, I think that the main thing, Tennessee has struggled this year, especially in, you know, SEC play, with being able to, you know, take care of these kind of lesser opponents. You know, you look back at their losses to someone like Vanderbilt or to Missouri, and then you get swept by Kentucky. So really you question, can this Tennessee team really find it when it's necessary? They weren't able to find it on the road here. So what's going to happen in this SEC tournament? What's going to happen in March Madness? Are they going to be able to come out and, you know, make shots and play, you know, the best defense they played all year? They've been number one defense all year long, and yet they have been able to win these crucial games. So I really question Tennessee's ability to win games going forward. All right, well, let's talk about some SEC men's basketball postseason awards. To start off, we got Player of the Year and Freshman of the Year, of course, going to Brandon Miller. I think that there was a little bit of controversy just because of the outside situation that has been plaguing Brandon Miller the past month and a half. But outside of that, I think this was a pretty obvious pick to win the award. Alex, would you have anyone different winning this?
I really don't think you can put anybody over Brandon Miller. If you were to put somebody, maybe a guy like Oscar Tshiebwe, who's been playing good for Kentucky, but Brandon Miller really separated himself from the pack this year.
Yep. Coaches, co-coaches of the year, actually. We got Buzz Williams and Jerry Stackhouse. I agree with Buzz Williams here. I don't know about Jerry Stackhouse. I think that, you know, a few weeks ago, you were just talking about him being fired out. And I think that he's done well turning it around the past month. But I don't think that he was really a coach of the year, in my opinion.
I have to kind of disagree there. I mean, like you said, Nathan, I was calling for him to be fired earlier this year. But he kind of really turned it around midseason after that huge loss to Alabama, getting some key wins against teams like Tennessee and I think Missouri as well. I really do think he deserved this award along with Buzz Williams, what he's been doing with Vanderbilt, who earlier didn't really look like they were going to do much, but I think they might even surprise some teams in the SEC tournament and make a run.
I guess we'll have to see. All right, defensive player of the year goes to Liam Robbins. I don't really think anyone outside of him has done anything to deserve this award. I think that, of course, Oscar Tshiebwe is there just because of his inside presence, and blocking ability. I think someone like Charles Bediako, who's been much improved defensively this year, I think that he could have been considered, but I had no problem with Liam Robbins winning this award.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, he's first in SEC in blocks per game with 3.2 and third of the country with that. So I really don't think you can put a guy over him. Maybe if you're going to put a guy like D. Davis of Arkansas, being probably one of the best defensive guards in the country, but I really don't think you can put him over a guy like Liam Robbins.
Sixth man of the year goes to Javon Quinterly and Antonio Reeves. I think that this is probably the perfect pair. Javon Quinterly really stepping up lately, and Antonio Reeves has really been that guy for Kentucky, and he's really had that spark for him, especially late in the season when they've needed some wins. And I think that really, if you look at these two guys, I think that really they're starters in my opinion. They should be probably starting, but they coming off the bench, they've done really well this year.
You'd have to agree, especially in these last few weeks. They both stepped up when the other star players have sort of faded away. Javon Quinterly, Antonio Reeves, really the guys I looked at to win this award. There were some Arkansas fans I saw on Twitter complaining that Ricky Council, the fifth, wasn't on this. I have some bad news for him. He started 25 of his 31 games he played in, so I don't think he's eligible to win the Sixth Man of the Year award. So sorry, Arkansas fans.
Even with that, I don't think that he was better than either of these two guys to win it. All right, first team All SEC. You got Brandon Miller, Colin Castleton, Oscar Tshiebwe, Tui Smith, Kwobi Brown, Santiago Vescovi, Wade Taylor the fourth, and Liam Robbins. I feel like that's probably the perfect list. Maybe I would disagree a little bit with Tui Smith. I feel like he's kind of one trick pony here with just standing in the paint and shooting the ball. But outside of him, I feel like everyone deserved to be on this list.
Yeah, I think all of them really deserve to be here, like you said, Nathan. I think one guy maybe not deserve to be on there is Colin Castleton. Florida really wasn't that great this season. Wasn't impressed with Colin Castleton whatsoever. But outside of that, I think they got this right.
Second team, all SEC. You got Mark Sears, Anthony Black, Ricky Council fourth, John, oh my gosh, Janiah Broome, Wendell Green Jr., KJ Williams, Zakai Ziegler, and Tyrese Ratchford. I don't have any disagreements with any of this. I feel like they all deserve to be. I think that you could probably make a case for someone like Ricky Council the fourth to be first team. I feel like he's had good production, but really, I think that the games he struggled in really held him back in this scenario.
Yeah, one guy I think that felt like left off was a guy like Antonio Reeves, who won Sixth Man of the Year or Co-Sixth Man of the Year. I feel like he had a good year. I'm not really sure you could put him over. Maybe a guy like Anthony Black, who kind of struggled this year at times. But overall, I think they got this list right as well.
Your all defensive team. You got Charles Bediako, Devo Davis, Colin Castleton, Zakai Ziegler, and Liam Robbins. I think that someone like Colin Castleton could probably be exchanged for someone like Oscar Tshiebwe, just because of the way Oscar Tshiebwe has played this season. Other than that, I feel like everyone on this list has done a pretty good job. I definitely agree with Liam Robbins being there, especially winning Defensive Player of the Year. And of course, Devo Davis, who has been one of the best guards in the league playing defense. And of course, Zakai Ziegler, who really was leading Tennessee until his injury.
One guy I think maybe should have been on this list is Brandon Miller. Recently, he's been really playing good defense. The guys at the broadcast team have really given him credit for the way he's improved. But if you're looking at the overall year, yeah, like you said, Nathan, Oscar Tshiebwe is definitely one of the guys to look at over somebody like Colin Castleton.
Yeah, I think the main thing with Brandon Miller is how he's kind of struggled when he's been put in screens, kind of making decisions. I feel like that's held him back to win, to make this team. But if you're talking about like present Brandon Miller, he's really turned into a defensive menace. You think about like how many blocks he's been able to get in the game, or he's really been able to control the inside where when he first started the season, he struggled. I feel like that was one of his weaknesses. He's definitely improved there. Your all freshman team, you got Jaden Bradley, Noah Clowney, Brandon Miller, Anthony Black, Riley Kugel, Chris Livingston, Cason Wallace, GG Jackson, Julian Phillips. I don't think that Riley Kugel should have made it on this list. I feel like there were better options. I think that Anthony Black is kind of iffy, but outside of those two guys, I feel like especially GG Jackson should be there for what he's been able to do at South Carolina. But this list, besides those two people, I agree with.
Yeah, if you look at a guy like Julian Phillips out of Tennessee, I'm not been really impressed with him this year, especially if you look at the Auburn game, didn't shoot well, like at majority of his points from the free throw line. If you look at the best freshman in the SEC, I'm not sure if he's there yet. I think he probably needs another year in that Tennessee system to get to that point where he's probably one of the better guys in the SEC.
Yeah, I feel like what he's been able to do outside of like, yeah, I know he's dealt with injuries, but when he has played, I feel like he's been a difference maker for this Tennessee team. So I feel like that alone should put him on this all freshman team. All right, Alex, what did we see from the NFL Combine this week?
Yeah, there was definitely some guys that definitely went down in draft stock and some went up. There were some guys that maybe had Trayvon Walker as performance. So who do you got as your winners and losers of this draft combine, Nathan?
Yeah, I'm gonna start off with someone like Bijan Robinson, who really proved how dominant he is of a runner. His ability to make some quick cuts, how fast he is, how strong he is. I feel like that just improves his draft stock more. If he's not the first running back taken, then I'll be surprised to this point. Of course, you got someone like Jahmyr Gibbs who. His 40 time is incredible. I believe he ran a 4.36. I mean, that's unbelievable. I don't think I didn't believe he was that fast. So he's definitely making the case to be drafted higher too. Anthony Richardson, really, physicals aside, he was able to make some really good decisions when passing the ball at the combine, and he's really making teams really question where he should be drafted. I think that really he's probably gonna be drafted in the top 15 now just because of the combine.
Yeah, I think Anthony Richardson was probably the biggest winner of the draft combine. He set a quarterback record for the broad jump, the vertical jump, and was the fourth best since 2003 for the quarterback 40 time. And then he also had the second best ball velocity of any quarterback in draft combine history. So I definitely think he moved himself up probably to the top three quarterbacks in this draft class. He definitely has the physicals to come into the NFL. It's just going to come down to his decision making and his pocket presence. And then
As far as losers go, Alex, other than Jalen Carter, I think that Kelee Ringo really struggled in the combine with defensive drills where he had to turn his hips, being able to locate the ball and really make a play on the ball. He really struggled with that. So you're really gonna, I think that he's probably one of the biggest losers outside of his teammate Jalen Carter. What do you think?
yeah, I should agree with you there with Kelee Ringo. But another guy that I was kind of disappointed with was Jordan Addison. He had a 4.4940. That's the slowest time for a receiver under 175 pounds since 2003. Definitely want to see a faster speed in a guy his size. Disappointed there. And then his 34-inch vert and his 10.2 broad jump were also disappointing. I'm not really sure what to make of him at this point. He definitely he's fallen in my draft on my draft board. I think guys like Quentin Johnson, Jackson Smith and Jigba, and maybe even a guy like a Zay Flowers from Boston College have hopped him at this point.
Yeah, I feel like Jordan Addison, physicals aside, he really hasn't shown up at the combine. I feel like he's been really someone who's been quiet, who's really been in the background, and that's not something you want to see from a star receiver like him, who should be making the case to be one of the first receivers drafted.
Yep. Another guy I look at to be a loser is Michael Mayer, the tight end at Notre Dame. He really had a terrible combine, didn't show athleticism off. He had a 4.7540 32.5-inch vert, and a 9'10" broad jump. He also showed bad form with blocking sleds. So especially with the guy many think are the tight end one in this draft class, really didn't show his athleticism off. Definitely saw a guy like Darnell Washington jump over him on my draft board with the performance he had.
Yeah, Darnell Washington is insane. Just being able to go up and get the ball, I think that's going to put him miles ahead. And I think they'll probably land him, you know, as the first tight end drafted.
Can't agree more.
All right, Alex, anything else we got?
All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.